So they were intrigued when they heard the words, "You can be pregnant with your adopted child," and it led them down a really magnificent road. I am talking about our guests today, Madison and Toby Smith, and their children, Pia and Judah, are with them. This is the Embryo Adoption Podcast from the National Embryo Donation Center. For those of you watching the video version, you can see this beautiful family and their lovely kids. And for those of you just listening on an audio platform, you'll probably hear the kids from time to time. And that's great. We love the fruit of this labor. So we love hearing the kids. So I'm going to set the stage here. This is really part two of an interview that we started about a year and a half ago. So this is sort of like the rest of the story. We talked with you guys on the podcast of our medical partners, Southeastern Fertility, back when you were in a different stage of the embryo adoption process. You had just selected your embryos, but you had not gone through the transfer. So that was a while ago. Now here we are, and you have these children who are 7 months old, or not 7 months old, but a few months old. These twins. I guess they're about 7 months old, 5, 6 months old. So let me ask you. You said last time we talked, Madison, you weren't nervous about the transfer, and you were surprised that you were not nervous about the frozen embryo transfer. Let me ask you all, what was it actually like? Did you ever get nervous? What was the process like? Let's just sort of pick up the story.
Can you hear me okay? The way the phone's set up, I want to make sure you can hear
Yes,
me.
I can hear
Awesome.
you terrific.
Awesome. Okay.
I think near the end of the
Process.
process, we felt peace, and then right before
Yeah.
the transfer that morning, we were pretty nervous. I don't know what we were nervous about. I think it was more,
Anticipation of the unknown, I
yeah.
guess.
I guess it's kind of like the nausea you get on Christmas morning.
Yeah, the excitement and all that. Just for reference, we went to breakfast and
Okay.
we were only there for 15 minutes,
Yeah.
if that says anything, because we could not eat.
We got our food, and then we told them bring us
Yeah, that's
the
exactly how it happened. But just we I was more so nervous about the actual act of the transfer. Not really the, I guess the,
success of it.
yeah, like the outcome. I felt a lot of peace about whatever happened, whether one stuck, both stuck, or none. I just wanted to kind of see what would happen, I guess. I wanted them to both stick ultimately. That's why we transferred too. But we both felt a lot of peace, I think, about the actual, the outcome of the transfer.
Yeah. I think it's more like when you know you have to go see the dentist. That's what it was more of that kind of nervous.
Well, obviously, it was a success. You had said that you only wanted to do this once, and whatever you got, you got. So obviously the transfer took. What was going through your head, each of you, when you found out you were having twins? I mean, you could have, it could have not been a success. You could have only had one. You could have had two. You ended up knowing you were going to have two. What was that like?
So us finding out that it was twins was actually, it was kind of funny. We like to tell this story. Our sonographer was at, we did outside monitoring at another fertility clinic, and obviously they had to do all their measurements before we could see anything on the ultrasound
So they could
screen.
talk to us.
We knew we were pregnant. I had taken at-home tests. We had already had our betas, and all of our betas were, they were perfect. They weren't abnormally high, but they were like right on track. And so we told her, we transferred two embryos, just a heads up. It could be twins, it could only be one. So we stayed there for probably 5 or 10 minutes.
Was
It
the
felt,
longest 5 minutes.
yeah, it felt like so long. And she finally said, "Okay, are you ready to see the screen?" She turned it and we only saw one baby. We only saw one baby on the screen. And I said, "Okay, so there's one baby then." And she said, "Well, how many did you want?" And I said, "Well, we transferred two, but if only one stuck, that's okay too. But we transferred two, so we were hoping to see two." And she said, "Okay, so you want two then?" And I was like, "If that's what we're gonna have, then yeah. But if it's only one, that's okay." Well, so she moved the screen, or she moved the thing over just a little bit, and She said, well, there's your second baby. And we both just were so excited.
We were really excited.
I mean, I started tearing up. I didn't actually cry, but I did start tearing up. We were just so excited. I have a selfie that we took as soon as she left the room of us with our ultrasound pictures of the two babies. Just the most excitement. Everyone else in our family just knew it was going to be twins, but I wasn't convinced. I thought it was only one. So
well, we didn't realize how much we wanted
twins.
Twins.
Yeah.
Until we were thinking, we were sitting there, and there was a possibility that one
didn't make it.
Didn't make it.
Yeah, or didn't stick. And
because ultimately, we wanted at least one.
Right.
But we didn't know how bad we wanted to.
Yeah.
Until we knew, I guess. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty clear that two complete your family. It's a great looking family picture right there. So describe the moment for me that Pia and Judah, who are NEDC babies 1225 and 1226, describe for me the moment when they were born. And then just the adjustments to at first life in the NICU where they started, and then life once they got home.
It was.
We could start even before they were born.
We had a very, I had a very difficult pregnancy. Their birth story, it kind of starts, you know, earlier in the pregnancy. I had to have a surgery whenever I was 22 weeks pregnant. In order to prevent me from going into preterm labor, I was at risk for it. And after that, I had to be put on a moderate bed rest for the rest of the pregnancy, which was all summer, which was horrible because I was hot and I wanted to swim. I couldn't swim. But, you know, that's fine. So end of July, I got COVID. And then a week later, I got pancreatitis. And ended up in the hospital. We went to the hospital where we live, and they transferred me to the hospital that I was going to deliver at because that's where the level three NICU was. And at that point, I was only 28 weeks pregnant. Mm-hmm. I was there for 6 days. I was on a liquid diet the entire time. And they finally sent me home. I was healthy again. Flash forward 3 weeks later, I finally got to have my baby shower. Thank goodness. But then 3 weeks later, I went to the hospital I was going to deliver at. I woke up that morning having contractions. I was right at 30 weeks pregnant. And I called my obstetrician, and she told me to go to, I'm sorry. She told me to go to the hospital just to make sure everything was okay. And I was having contractions. So they kept me, started me on all the things that I needed to be on. 2 days later, found out I had pancreatitis again. And then 2 days after that, we met with my team of doctors. I had three different doctors that I was talking to, plus the NICU doctors for the twins once they were born. I met with three doctors, and they came in and said, your body is no longer providing nutrients to the babies and yourself, so you're doing without, and we're going to have to keep you here until they are born. I was 30 weeks and some change pregnant at that point. They wanted me to stay pregnant until 34 weeks. Obviously every day that they stayed in, my body was better for them, but every day that they stayed in for me was not good for me. It was a very bad thing for me to stay pregnant. I was very sick. It could have been really bad. Really dangerous for me to stay pregnant. So I had to stay in the hospital until they were born, obviously.
At 32 weeks and one day.
Yeah, they were born at 32 weeks and one day. I was there for an extra week after we found out that I would be staying there. And it was, we say all the time, it was like Groundhog's Day. We kept waking up.
It was a reoccurring nightmare.
Every single day.
Last week, because, you know, when you're in the hospital for that for a week at a time, you have the nurses, and then the shift changes. Every 12 hours, so you have to re-explain yourself. You wake up and you have a new person to try to convince to take the babies. We always say it was a crap show
until we got to the operating room.
And then that was the most magical thing.
It was so I went into labor that they wouldn't stop. They told me once I hit 32 weeks, they would not stop my labor. The entire time I was in the hospital, I was having contractions every single day, and they were actively stopping my contractions. So I'd wake up and, you know, be in labor, and they'd say, "We're going to stop it." Well, at 32 weeks, August 18th, I went into labor that evening. I had just met with my high-risk doctor, and she said, "If you go into labor today, we will not stop it." Toby went into work for a couple of hours. He had to do an evening job. And I got on the phone with my mom, and I told her I felt like I was having contractions and that I thought they were about every 7 minutes apart. Well, we were on the phone for 15 minutes. And whenever Toby got there, she said, "Toby, she said that they're every 7 minutes, but we've been on the phone for 15 minutes and she's had three." So, and I couldn't talk during them. So she told me that what I wanted didn't matter and he needed to go get the nurse. So he did. And the nurse walked in and put me on a monitor, said I wasn't in labor. They weren't contractions, and that we weren't going to have babies that night. But then the next morning, I had labored all night, constant contractions. No, nothing was helping them. And
they're taking the time out to switch the kids if you're not watching, which you have to do sometimes. Judah's okay. Getting a little fussy. That's okay.
Yes. Yeah. But so the next morning around 3:30. I think Toby had gotten pretty much fed up with what he had to hear and see me go through all night. He finally told the nurse that, you know, they couldn't let me keep going on like that.
I think they were waiting on my word or something.
Mm-hmm. So around 4:30, we went downstairs and met with my doctor, and she said, "It looks like your contractions are about every 2.5 minutes now. You're in active labor, and it's time for them to come out," which I was ready for, but in that moment, terrifying.
Yeah.
So about 2 hours later, I'm prepped for an emergency C-section, and they took me back. About 10 minutes later, they took Toby back. He came in the room around 6:40, and we once he was in there, it was great. I was terrified until I saw him. They sat him next to me, and we just started talking. And we had a birth playlist that we wanted to play. So we started playing our music, and we cut on the song "And We Dance" by Judah, which is who he's named after. And at 6:46, we heard a sweet little cry.
Yeah.
And they said 6:46 a.m.
And then that was a sweet cry.
And then we heard our,
I cried.
And then Toby started bawling. And then at 6:47, we heard another cry, and they said 6:47, and they were here. Pia came first, and then Judah.
I love it. And you guys amazing. Yeah, because you have, you know, infertility for quite a long time. You had dealt with it, and this was your one shot. And so what's it like being parents now to these little bundles, by the way, who look very, very healthy? I've seen them in person just a few weeks ago, but they look even healthier now than they did when I saw them.
They're best. Thriving. They're thriving. They were in the NICU for about 2 months. Pia was in there for 55 days and Judah was there for 49 days. They both had a really long NICU journey.
But it's almost a blessing that they were in the NICU, because we've never had kids.
Yeah.
We've always held babies and gave them back to their parents. And we didn't know that Pia's was the first diaper that I've ever changed. And so them being in the NICU for as long as they were kind of prepped us.
We learned so much. It was obviously the most terrifying.
We learned
thing.
More about parenting than a regular.
Yeah.
Well, not a regular, but like, I guess a parent.
A full-term parent. A
that
parent,
brings their baby home the next day type thing.
We had to pass like a CPR class. It was like a 2.5 hour long class. And I'm so glad we did. But it was a very terrifying 2 months, obviously. But they're doing so great. Like, I never would have thought that they'd be doing this well 3 months after coming home. But they're doing great. Judah actually has two teeth. He cut them this week, and they both have started rolling over. So that's amazing. But it's just the best. It's been the craziest journey, and we still can't get over how much we love them.
Yeah,
it just surprises us every day. Every time they do something new, or
we weren't expecting to love them the way we do.
Oh yeah,
like I knew we'd probably come around, I guess, but
It just consumes you, but in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And it changes you too, I think.
That's a really good way to put it. And yeah, you too have expressed that several times. Anytime it seems like I'm in touch with you, you're like, we can't believe how much we love them. We weren't prepared for that. And that's, boy, that's the statement of a new parent. That's for sure. That's how we all feel. Nobody can explain it to you. It's one of the greatest things in the world. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about your relationship with your donors. I know you do. I mean, and this has been great talking about the preterm delivery, and if you're going to have a multiple birth, which some NADC couples do, you need to be prepared for some of the potential things that could happen. You've given us a really good window into that. Give us a good window, though, into your open relationship with your donors. I know it's a terrific one.
They are the best. Love them. I think it speaks volumes that I'm friends with their biological mom on Facebook, as is Toby, but I kept her up to date the entire pregnancy. And once we found out that they were going to come early and need some NICU time, I told her automatically. And all she said to me was that I had done my job of keeping them safe and that I needed to focus on myself. And I think that that shows so much about how she loves us just as much as we love her and their biological dad as well, and the babies. We have, I mean, probably a better relationship than I thought we would have. We had the best mediation with them. We didn't even need mediation. We've done now 2 Zoom calls with them, once before the transfer, during the mediation, and then actually 2 days before Christmas, we spoke with them as well. They sent us 2 cans of formula whenever we couldn't find their preemie formula that we needed. They sent us 2 books about embryo adoption, as well as some sleepers for them. I mean, they are just the best.
Couldn't ask for a better.
No, we could not ask for a better extended family. I like to call them our extended family.
It's beautiful. They're amazing. What a beautiful relationship. Yep. And of course, go ahead.
It's almost a natural, like, love and appreciation.
Yeah.
Like, with the complex, what's the word?
For complexity.
The complexity of what embryo adoption is.
Yeah.
You would think there would be some, like, weird, like, awkward tension or something like that. But it's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our love for the babies.
It makes us love them even more.
Yeah.
Having this relationship
our gratitude just takes over.
It does.
And
yeah,
it just seems like we can get on the Zoom with them and it's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like a warm experience, I guess.
Yeah. I was really nervous about having, I really wanted a good relationship and I wanted something that felt organic.
Yeah.
And so it was a big deal for us to actually see them, you know, as face to face as possible before we decided to go forward with them. And even that first time that we spoke with them, it was just so easy.
Yeah.
They're just the sweetest couple. Their biological mom is only a month older than my mom. Exactly a month older. So it's really cool that they're pretty much the same age as the twins' grandparents, but they're their biological parents. I think that makes it really interesting.
It's like an extra, like a bonus set of cool grandparents.
It is. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. So looking back on the whole thing, is there anything about the embryo adoption process that you wish you had known on the front end that you would want to pass along to anybody right now? Because you know that a decent amount of the people listening to this podcast will be people who are considering embryo adoption.
Right.
I think that there should be maybe a counseling on the possibility of carrying multiples.
Uh-huh.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of the toll it can take on your body. And
We didn't really do
obviously,
our own research.
everything that I had going on in my pregnancy, getting pancreatitis twice, and then your body cutting off supply to you, and not being able to provide anymore, that's a very rare occurrence. That doesn't happen to
I
everyone.
think it was like one in
Yeah, it's very rare. It doesn't
something.
happen. But it nonetheless, it was still a very difficult pregnancy. And I think that that would be.
Other twin moms you've spoken with have said that they've had a singleton pregnancy and a multiples pregnancy, either double or triple or whatever. And there's just they say there's no comparison.
Yeah.
There's the twin pregnancy and up is just a lot more taxing, I guess,
Yeah.
on your
Yeah,
body.
it is. And emotionally, I think it's taxing as well. So I think that that would be good to kind of go into, even if you talk, just getting them in touch with other women that have had multiples, I think that'd be really helpful. But other than
Now,
that, it's been
I
fantastic.
think if somebody that didn't have a good relationship with God had to go through that, it would be very hard because one of the things I didn't carry him, but seeing her go through the pain and stuff that she had to go through, there was a script, there was a speaker, he's actually a rapper, KB. He was speaking and he's talking about how his wife, she did all three of her labors without any medication. And her reasoning was that there was purpose in the pain. And I think that is what got me through the
Yeah.
emotional
Yeah.
toll of seeing her go through everything,
There's
is that
purpose.
there was a reward and all the like all the infertility struggles and going through like embryo adoption process and
Yeah.
this the toll pregnancy takes on your body and everything.
But that being said, as difficult of a pregnancy as it was, I would never change anything about it.
No.
Everything, like, and I don't want to sound like I was complaining because it
Okay.
was, they are worth everything. I would do it again in a heartbeat, plus more, just to have them again because they're the best.
Well, we all know that God is the best author. That sounds really cliche. I mean, it does. It sounds really cliche. Christians say that all the time, but you guys have just sort of brought it to bear on real life. We do know that God is the best author. He can't do us any wrong. And he's writing our story. So you got to learn to love the story you're in, the good parts and the bad parts. And you guys have done such a wonderful job of that. Well, we're just so thankful to you for sharing your story. I know you probably want to get those kids to bed. So we will wrap it up. I'll just let you know that if you want more information on embryo adoption or donation, just go to our website for the NEDC, embryodonation.org. Again, that's the National Embryo Donation Center, embryodonation.org. If you're a fan of this podcast, give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you listen on, or if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and smash the like button and subscribe to our channel. I'm Mark Mellinger, and this has been the Embryo Adoption Podcast.